You are listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, where we share our expertise in the discovery, practice, and implementation of a strengths-based approach to people, teams, and culture. For more resources about developing your strengths, the strengths of your team, or the strengths of your entire organization, visit us on the web at leadershipvisionconsulting.com. Hello, everyone. It's Nathan Freeberg, and today in the podcast, we're talking about well-being. Sarah Schlipp-Riedel and I are going to be evaluating and really just listening to these little snippets that we took from each of our team members as they are talking about well-being and really wrestling what it means for them. But first, here is a brief clip from Brian Schubring, our president, founder, and CEO, describing why well-being is such a focus for our company this year.
That seems like it's a really easy question for me to answer because the last 3 years, we as a company have found ourselves consistently reacting to some of the same requests from the organizations that we're working with. In some way, our clients are asking these ongoing questions of how do I pay attention to this person's health? And how do I have a better, healthier, more functioning team? And what they're asking is about a person's well-being. They want to make sure that when someone's having an emotional day or when someone's not feeling physically well, they're asking, well, how can we make this environment more conducive to helping that person? That's a well-being question. And they're also asking then, how can we create an environment that contributes to a person's well-being? And so why did we choose to focus on that? Because I have found that over the last 3 years, as we have responded to that and began to address it within teams and began to write curriculum around that, people have responded not only quickly, but they've really responded well to paying attention to something more than just meeting objectives, getting the job done, and having these problems like, is that person working enough? Or are they showing up on time? They're asking different questions like, well, why? And when you begin to ask that question, why is a person blank, then I believe you're really getting into an area where well-being can be a really useful question to ask. Like, what else is going on in their family life, their emotional life, their relational life, their social life that's contributing to how they're showing up? That's when you get into well-being. And within the industry, this is the business industry in general, a lot of conversation is happening now. A lot of writing and articles and books are being published around well-being. And so one of the ways that we're approaching this now with Leadership Vision is we're practicing actively engaging well-being as a team. We are asking individuals to spend some time thinking about what it means for them. We're practicing the conversations. We're actually doing some studying around that together as a group and doing things as a team that promote well-being as a way to put us in a place where we know what it feels like to have that type of well-being stress in our life, what it means to talk about that with somebody else, being vulnerable with asking for help when it comes to areas of well-being, and how can we recognize what those issues are within ourselves, because how can we help other people that we aren't actively practicing well-being. I think that our team and the members of our team, we all have disciplines and processes and relationships that hold us accountable to our well-being, but we've never put well-being in the center and asked our team to talk about that collectively. I can see the benefits of well-being in people's lives, but we haven't done that as a group. So I feel that now this is a time when we're now going to step into this and lean into this ourselves to explore more around what vocabulary do we use, what tools and resources can we use to investigate what well-being means for us, and come to not only a better understanding of it as individuals, but an understanding of what it means for us as a team and as an organization.
This is kind of a long episode for us here today, so let's just get right to it with Sarah Schlipp-Riedel and I talking about well-being. Enjoy. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Nathan.
How are you today?
I'm doing well.
I am glad to hear that. Would you say your levels of well-being are high, low, or just middle of the road today?
Middle of the road today.
Okay.
I'm usually pretty high.
Okay.
Generally very sunny disposition.
This is true.
I don't know if it's because it's a little gray outside or it's the middle of the week. I sort of thought today was tomorrow. So I've had to recalibrate a couple times today.
But okay.
Yes. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So as you know, and some of our listeners know, I had my tonsils taken out beginning of December. That was like, I'd say a 3 week recovery to feeling back to my normal self. I lost a bunch of weight, which isn't a good thing. But my appetite's back. All that's good. But then in there, our whole family got sick. And so I feel like This week, so what was the start of this week? The 20th of January is like the first full week that I felt like a normal human being since the beginning of December. And so my well-being bucket, if you want to call it that, is full to the brim. I'm feeling really excited about what we're going to talk about today, other podcast things we have lined up, and just kind of all of 2020 in general. Now, I say that and also say that my, I guess, barometer, is that what it is? Mm-hmm. What I'm measuring against was pretty low, so maybe things aren't that great. But no, I digress. It's beautiful here in Portland. It was like 50 degrees today, wow. Which for me, 50 degrees in the wintertime is basically like tropical paradise. Mm-hmm. So all those things, how can you not just be flying high? I'm sorry that it's gray in Minnesota, but...
It's all right.
Well, Sarah, you kind of started this conversation, this two, I don't know, 3 week little mini series that we're doing. You sent us an email or Slack message, and you wanted to just sort of unpack, I guess, or level set, I think was your word. Like, what do we mean? What do we think about, feel like? What does each team member, like, what does well-being mean to them? So last week on the podcast, I mentioned this, and I posed that question to all of our listeners. Do you have anything more to say about that?
Yeah, sure. With the emphasis of well-being this year, I was going through a process of seeking to architect basically a content calendar, an intentional content calendar that would highlight the areas in which we were going to focus on to develop in this emphasis of well-being. And the more I sat with it, and the more I reflected on it, I realized that I needed to understand how each member of the team defined well-being so that to meet the needs of the organization was to understand the organizational need, right?
Makes sense.
And so
that's good logic.
Right. I can't just base this on my own definition or some greater philosophy. And I'm so glad that I did, because though there are some common themes that we'll hear more about in just a moment, there were some real differences that I'm so grateful to be more aware of now as we move forward.
I want to talk just a little bit about some of those differences very broadly. So something I mentioned in the podcast last week was, you know, I had people just say, you know, basically answer your question. What does a healthy, happy, or you look like? You know, what is your definition of well-being? And I said, go ahead and Google it if you want, or don't, because there's just so much research. There's so much data. There's so many opinions about what does well-being mean. But I wanted to just share three, and this isn't meant to be like the definitive definition. Is that how you say that? Mm-hmm. The like end all be all, but just kind of three authors or three sources, I guess I should say, about what they mean. So the first is Tom Rath. He wrote a book called Wellbeing back in 2010 that I read when it first came out. And it was kind of cool. He talked about well-being in five areas: career well-being, social well-being, financial well-being, physical well-being, and community well-being. And there was this cool assessment you could take to see where you were at in each of those domains. And then the idea, as I remember it, was that you go back every either 3 or 6 months and basically see if you improve. And why that one I wanted to point out, because part of the point of that was not necessarily to say, oh, my career well-being is, you know, in the top percentile and I'm good and I'm set and my community is in the bottom, and so I need to focus all my attention there, but to strive for some sense of balance, to get to some sense of normalcy of, you know, sort of that idea of 51% satisfaction in those areas, but that you're really focused on them, that you're thinking about them, that you're always like, how do I pay attention to these things so I have higher levels of satisfaction? Are you familiar with that book at all?
I'm not, okay. But those topics make great sense to me. And I think you were sort of getting at this, that there's a lot that we are encouraged to pay attention to today in the world. So many things. But I like these exercises, and I can appreciate the benefit of completing an every so often assessment, because it causes you to pause, and whether it's the act of answering the questions themselves, where you're having to be kind of contemplative, or assessing the results, it sort of gives you a space to pause and reflect on how it's been going.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yep. And I think sometimes if we don't do that, it can be easy to kind of get way off course and then you don't realize it until it's too late. The second source, which I thought was interesting, was the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. They have this definition that says, well-being is a positive outcome that is meaningful for people and for many sectors of society because it tells us that people perceive that their lives are going well. Well-being integrates mental health, mind, and physical health, body, resulting, and this is really interesting, Sarah, resulting in more holistic approaches to disease prevention and health promotion, which is fascinating. There's a link that I'll share in the show notes that they can use this well-being score to, I think, estimate or calculate different diseases. So people with higher well-being scores or levels have less, you know, all the diabetes, heart disease, all the stuff, lower levels of that. And why I thought it was so interesting, because that's purely from like a health survival perspective, where you could argue that, you know, the Tom Rath one is more from like a productivity, like personal, professional productivity perspective. And so, again, you can take this one word, well-being, or it's a compound word, I guess, hyphenated. As we talk about it here today and throughout the year, I'll be curious to see, you know, if we take, you know, we're talking about it personally and professionally, but take, you know, sort of any kind of like hard lane into one of these areas.
We'll be right back.
At Leadership Vision Consulting, we have spent 23 years helping individuals explore the depth and dimension of their personal strengths and have helped hundreds of teams build positive culture. We're excited to now announce our new online membership platform that brings together the resources, community, and motivation that you need to grow your influence and build a positive team culture. Through our courses, workshops, live Q&A sessions, and more, you'll gain the skills and confidence you need to lead effectively. And with our supportive community of like-valued leaders, you'll never feel like you're doing it alone. Visit leadershipvisionconsulting.com/community to learn more.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing that I've really realized when paying attention in any particular area, it's like rising tides raises all boats in most instances.
Right.
So if you are seeking to focus on, you know, greater professional productivity, well-being, however it is that you would define that as an individual, awesome. I imagine that what is required of you to have a greater sense of well-being in that spills over into the other areas of your life. But I do think it's really healthy to unpack the many components that attribute, right? The many contexts that we spend our time and spend our life. Because you can be doing really well in one particular area and be suffering greatly somewhere else.
Right.
And vice versa.
Right. Yep. So they all... There's this pull and push on all of them. The last one I wanted to share was, and I don't know if I'm saying this name right, Tiki Davis, T-C-H-I-K-I. She's a PhD and founder of the Berkeley Wellbeing Institute, had a definition that says, well-being is the experience of health, happiness, and prosperity, not unlike what we've already heard. It includes having good mental health, high life satisfaction, a sense of meaning or purpose, and the ability to manage stress. And that idea of the sense of meaning or purpose is, for some of us, our entire life's journey, right? It's what we're trying to do our entire life. Maybe we get there, maybe we don't. And so that was interesting to me, because in some ways, that one's a little bit more intangible. If you look at, you know, financial well-being, that one's pretty easy to manage. Do you have more money than debts? You know, physical well-being, they're easier to manage, but or easier to measure? How do we measure this idea of like, do we have a true sense of our meaning or purpose in this world? And maybe that gets into, as we'll hear from a little bit later, some of like almost the spiritual well-being. And I don't have an answer to that. I just included that because I thought it was interesting. And again, maybe something that we unpack throughout our lives, and maybe, you know, today we have the sense of meaning and purpose in what we're doing in our personal and professional lives. And maybe that changes tomorrow, you know, metaphorically tomorrow, you know, say a couple years down the road or whatever, not actually tomorrow. We don't want to be yo-yoing all over the place. But I just thought that was really an interesting way to think about this idea of well-being.
Yeah, I love that definition. I really do. I think that notion of a sense of meaning or purpose being connected to a sense of well-being. Mm-hmm. You know, if you wake up every day believing that, you know, you are here for a reason,
right,
that you are a part of something greater than yourself, that feels really good. That feels really good. And mm-hmm. if you have a connection to that, or you have some level of definition around that, these other areas of well-being that we've highlighted, whether it be social well-being, you know, financial well-being, physical well-being, if you feel connected to something greater than yourself, then spending time and investing in those areas makes it more likely that you are going to be able to realize that purpose, to live into that.
Absolutely.
To contribute. So I really like the connection that, as we're suspecting Tiki, if that's the appropriate pronunciation, I really appreciate that connection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where, like, with some of the strengths work we do, fit becomes really important to better understand, like, your meaning and purpose. So I have some more stuff here that I think I'm going to skip over, just kind of in the interest of time, because I want to get to sort of the bulk of what we're going to be chatting about here today, Sarah, and that is reflecting on our own colleagues' definitions of well-being. So this reminds me a little bit about, it sounds so weird to say this, but back in the day, the DVD commentary, when like the you know, maybe the main actor and the director would kind of watch the movie as you watch them, and you get to listen to them talking about, oh, this scene was really interesting to direct and act, and oh, that was actually an accident. We didn't mean to do that, but we left it in because it was good. So what we're going to doing here is just going to play a clip for you. I think they're all about 2 minutes or less. And I simply asked each of our colleagues, except for Carrie, she wasn't able to be there that day when I recorded this, just asked them to answer the question that you asked them, Sarah, which was, what does well-being mean to you? What does a healthy or happy, in this case, Nathan, look like, feel like, and sound like? So let's start here. And Brian's actually going to go first. He's our president and founder, CEO. And he actually is going to share a little bit about why we're talking about well-being, and then he will share more of his, I guess, personal definition of well-being.
Well-being for me means a unique relationship and interaction between some very elemental things that I consider important: my emotions, relationships, my social connections, my physical activity, and my spiritual well-being. So for me, those five elements are the core elements that contribute to my state of well-being. And so for me, that involves a daily practice of engaging in different activities or different practices that cultivate this sense of equilibrium or balance between all of those areas. I don't feel like one is static against another, that there's this really unique interaction of how it is that I'm moving between those five worlds and how mindful I am of those. That doesn't mean that I pay active attention equally to all five of those elements. As we all know, like for those of us that pay attention to different parts of our well-being, we are also aware that when one thing becomes a little rocky or a little bit sticky or becomes challenging for us, we obviously focus more attention on that. But at this stage of my life, I've become really focused on how do I practice a layer of mindfulness and integration with each of those five elements. Some of that's easy, some of it's not so much, but I believe that everybody can achieve emotional, relational, and social health by being mindful of some of these things, but well-being is something that, you know, once you kind of slack off on it a little bit, you tend to lose ground. I think that there's this unique dynamic to that. So that's why we want to be able to spend time as people focusing on our well-being. First of all, naming what those areas are for us that we would consider a value of our well-being, and then what is it that we practice to maintain an integrity of our well-being.
So Sarah, what do you think of Brian's thoughts on well-being? It's very what's philosophical, I think.
And you know, whenever you're having conversation with Brian on topics such as this, you have to really focus in and be willing to be curious and attentive,
right,
and ask clarifying questions, because the way that his mind works in his connectedness intellection is that it is deeply complex.
Right.
And if asked to clarify, he can certainly do it. So, you know, what I really hear in Brian's reflection is, you know, like the interconnectedness of the way that Brian sees and approaches the world most of the time. And in this instance, it's especially prevalent.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so much. And he shared with me this Celtic thing. I'm blanking on what it is, but it's like these three circles or four circles that there's no start and end. It's kind of like a figure eight, but it's like a bunch of them. And you think about, for him, thinking about well-being in those, that interconnectivity, there's like no start and end. So going back to what we were saying earlier, I think it just really, really echoes that. And it's something that I know I'm certainly trying to, I think, find the connection in my own life. How does my physical, mental, how do those things truly all interact? And can you at times have to pull a little bit harder on one area to get the other ones to sort of snap in line, if you will? Let's go on to Linda's, if that's okay, and listen to hers.
Well-being for me means that I am in sync with who I am in the context of the world. Well-being is super holistic for who I am. When I'm eating well, when I'm sleeping enough, if I'm moving my body, that's important. That will end up in a pile of sweaty workout clothes at the end of the week. That kind of points to you have been in motion, you have been exercising, you have been finding different ways to manage your stress, which is also a component of well-being. I know that I'm being well when I'm breathing well and clear. That is really important to me. I'm being well when I am connected to myself and those around me. When someone calls, I don't see that as an interruption. I see that as an invitation to connect. When I'm being well, my closet is organized and I know where things are. I've always said that my closet is the indicator of how I'm doing in my emotional or maybe even spiritual world. And so to keep that organized is key for me. But a telltale sign of when I am experiencing a state of well-being is when I wake up without an alarm and I wake up happy. When I'm in a state of well-being, I am keenly aware that I am making manifest the best parts of me. And words that I would use around that would be experiencing delight in the moment, or feeling calm, or radiating joy. And when I am in touch with those best parts of me, that causes me to be in sync and draw out the light of others in the context of the world.
One thing, Sarah, that jumps out from Linda's is those specific like physical signs.
Yeah.
She has asthma. She's suffered with that for her whole life. And so when she talks about breathing, like that's a sign, waking up without an alarm clock. I thought that was a cool way to think about, for her, obviously very contextualized, like this is how I know if I'm not in a place of well-being.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, you know, it's interesting because you could argue it's very different from what we just heard from Brian, being that, you know, and not that we're seeking to compare them, but
no.
I think what it highlights is the different ways that people make sense of this topic, how they contextualize it, how they would seek to help another person understand how they define it. Mm-hmm. And what I really love about Linda's reflections is, you know, you can hear such a maturity and a level of self-awareness in her words. And also, I hear a bit of an invitation in her in that, you know, that piece of identifying those very tactile specifics of what well-being really means
right.
to her.
So yeah.
Appreciate that.
And I don't know if it's communal is right, the right word, but it was just very inclusive of how, like, she's treating other people and other people feel maybe able or to be part of her world in some way if she's in that place. So
yes.
Next we're gonna chat with our not quite our newest member of our team, but Melissa Hyatt. So roll tape.
Well, I've always understood well-being as part of emotional health. That's how I've understood it, and it's like a three-legged stool of understanding what you're thinking, what you're feeling, and what you're doing, and how they're all connected. And since I was asked about this question about well-being, I've been wondering if there's a three-legged stool that could make up well-being. So one leg would be the emotional health. One would be physical health, maybe. And maybe the third, like a spiritual health. I'm still trying to think through that. I know for myself, I need to think more about the physical well-being side of that component. So I've gotten really good at being able to understand my own emotional health. That's something that I've practiced and really worked hard at. So emotional well-being, I feel I've exercised that really well and I understand it. Physical well-being for me, I've always tried to get a result with physical well-being. So, oh, I'll get into shape, or oh, I'll lose 20 pounds. And there is this new thing that's happening for me with physical well-being. So right after Christmas, I got sick. I got the flu. I did not feel good. And all of a sudden, there was this idea that, oh my gosh, what if I would never be able to feel physically well enough again to take care of myself physically? So it wasn't so much for this result that I wanted to pay attention to physical well-being, but just because I can, because I want to feel my best. Not to get to some result, but just be able to live life the way I want to live it. My granddaddy got so stiff that he couldn't even turn around when he was in the car. I don't want to be that kind of older person. I want to be able to use my body and walk and have breath. And so I see it in a different way right now when I think about physical well-being.
Oh, that's so good. And you know, one of the things I love most about Melissa is that whenever she is prompted to offer a reflection similar to this, I know she is going to have been so thoughtful and intentional in preparing her reflections. She, you know, she really takes seriously how it is she responds to these things because she is seen as such a valued expert. And so I think she does not take for granted, you know, how seriously and how much we pay attention to what she has to offer. So I really appreciate it. It causes me to pause and consider if I've been as thoughtful as I'm capable
right.
of.
Right.
You know, am I being as thorough and honest and maybe even as authentic as I strive to be with myself and others? So I appreciate that very much.
Absolutely. Well, and the simplicity of that stool analogy, the three parts of her well-being. My grandfather was a dairy farmer. They used three-legged stools and milked the cows back in the day. And so if one stool leg is something wrong with it, like you can't sit on it. So it's very obvious. Again, going back to this idea of being interconnected. So I appreciated that, I guess, analogy, metaphor that maybe we can think about. And I have more than three legs on my proverbial well-being stool, but something to think about. So Heather, who is the newest member of our team, shares her thoughts next.
So well-being for me looks like me making aligned choices that support my goals. It also looks like remembering to make time for myself and practicing self-love, which I think is one step beyond self-care. It's really taking care of not me towards my goals, but me as a person deserving love. I also think that it looks like holding space for others to be messy. When I'm not feeling well, when I don't have well-being, I think that remembering to hold that space is harder to do. I feel like I cut people off more. I'm more frantic. But when I'm really in my a well state of being, I think that I am able to hold all the space and have all the patience for people. I also think that well-being sounds like remembering what I'm grateful for, I deserve statements, and I care about statements. And finally, well-being feels like taking full breaths, like actually remembering to inhale deeply and exhale all the way. I feel like when I'm not in a well state of being, it's rushed and like very short, and you just don't have that full shoulder release. I think that well-being feels like having patience with my children. I have two tiny kids and they're constantly needing. And if I'm not in a well place, I can't give them what they need.
you know, I'm still getting to know Heather. And so I really appreciate hearing her reflections to prompts like these, because it's sort of like a an eye into who she is uniquely.
Yeah.
And just another reason for anyone listening to this to do this with your team, with old and new team members, because you can really learn a lot about anybody when you're asking them questions about how they would define something that we sort of collectively value. What I heard in Heather's reflections, and I'll have to revisit this with her, is, you know, I hear a real humanity in her response, that she's giving permission to all of us to be really human. And I just really appreciate her candor and authenticity in that, because I think what she talks about is, you know, when I'm not coming from a place of well-being, I can have those rough edges and, you know, I'm not showing up in a way that is consistent with how I aspire to. And I appreciate that she offered some examples of what that, you know, what that looks like and what it doesn't look like when it's not in alignment, or when one of those stool legs isn't as it should be.
You mean like with her kids, how she mentioned?
Yes, yes, yeah, exactly.
We talked a bit off mic about that. I was just like, holy cow, that's me. I think my, you know, kids are a mirror for so many of us, right? Those of us with kids, our kids reflect back the good and the bad. And I think for me, that was a blinking light of something that I also have to pay attention to, is just when she articulated that, like the way that she is patient or not with her kids. Wow. I mean, if my kids are acting up, it's usually because something's wrong with me. Not always. I'm not taking responsibility for their bad behavior, but it's just for me such a sign that I'm not present, which is usually my big kind of moment. Well, I'll share more about that later. I just really resonated with her as she kind of talked about like her kids being such a marker for her. So
I think that reflecting situationally can be really helpful too. Yeah. So when I was asking everyone to provide their definition of well-being for my better understanding, if someone had struggled to do so, I might have pointed them to specific instances or relationship dynamics that benefit or are, you know, impacted by the presence of or the absence of you coming from a place of well-being.
Yeah.
Right? And so that dynamic in parenthood, that's a good one, right? Like when I am coming from a place of well-being, how am I showing up for my children in a way that I'm not when I'm not coming from a place of well-being?
Yeah.
And that can be applied to how am I showing up at work? How am I, you know, showing up to my partner? How am I engaging with my parents, my siblings, my friends? Right?
Yeah.
That's a good great prompting.
It's a great reminder. Mm. Last but not least, we have Steph, and she had the hardest time articulating hers, or I should say getting going articulating hers, because she's also someone who thinks very deeply about things. But I thought, well, you'll hear it here, but she really challenged me in a couple of things too. So here's Steph.
What does a healthy Steph look like, feel like, and sound like? I think I feel connected to people in my life. I feel kind. I feel generous and loving. I think it sounds like me using kind words and having patience. I'm not very good at pausing and being appreciative of what's going well in my life. And I think I know that I am well when I catch myself in a moment just reflecting on how I'm thankful for things, even amidst hard things that are going on. Because I don't think that well-being necessarily means that there's nothing hard going on in your life. I think you can be having really hard conversations with people or processing difficult things in your life while still being well. I think, in fact, for me, having hard conversations with people and that are life-giving and being kind and generous in responses and how I'm thinking about things is a way that I practice well-being. But in those moments, if I'm being sharp or on edge or irritated, then I know that I'm not well. So those are my thoughts right now, Nathan.
So the whole idea of gratitude, and how she talked about, like, she knows she's in a place of well-being when she's able to be grateful for things. That's a big one for me. And I don't think I focus on that nearly as much as I should. I think often my maximizer and perhaps my futuristic strengths, they don't let me be satisfied. They always think that, you know, this could be better, or that could be, should be different, or, you know, something like that. But actually just sitting and reflecting on, no, I am grateful for what I have and for these things. If I can do that, or I should say, since I recorded Steph and she said that, and I've been thinking about it for the last couple of weeks, it's like, yeah, how do I just be grateful for, you know, this great rain jacket as I walk through this unexpected rain, and not just thinking about, oh man, this is such a bummer. So yeah, it was just, I don't know. I connected with a lot of what she said. Anything jump out for you?
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly heard the contemplation in her voice when approaching the conversation. I also hear like a curiosity.
Yeah.
Right? Like still trying to kind of figure out what this means for her,
sure.
Which I think is a really good reminder to all of us that we don't necessarily have to have it all figured out or even fully defined before we pursue something that we believe will prove beneficial for us. So, you know, it could have been very likely that one of our team members to whom I posed the question, you know, they could have just as easily responded by saying, you know, that's a good question. I don't know right now.
Yeah.
But I'm going to dig in and maybe I'll get back to you. And maybe I'll get back to you tomorrow. And maybe I'll get back to you next week.
Right.
Maybe I need more time than that.
So, Sarah, this leaves you and I. Would you like to go first or shall I go first?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to share. Though I was the question poser in this particular instance, the reflection for me wasn't instantaneous. And so it wasn't really until I had, you know, having the hard deadline of your and my coming together today to record this podcast that really forced me to get my thoughts together on the topic. So here's what I would offer. I know I'm in a state of well-being when my mind is peaceful, when my pace of thinking, speaking, and moving is efficient and intentional, when I am present in each precious moment, when I am patient with myself and others, when I have an optimistic outlook on all things. That's what well-being means to me. I would also offer how I obtain a state of well-being is by getting enough rest, focusing my time and attention on things that inspire and motivate me, blessing my body with activity and nutrients, spending time with people who fill my cup, taking quiet space to pause and reflect, practicing gratitude to be grounded, and being mindful of necessary whittling, which means to me, removing clutter figuratively and literally, and practicing the habits and disciplines that truly serve me. That's what I have to offer.
Sarah, that's good. I did not read this ahead of time, and I'm kind of glad that I didn't. I have so many questions for you. But I guess just the one that I'll ask you here, maybe we can talk later. A lot of these things are somewhat easy to measure. So how often are you looking at your calendar and seeing, yeah, I haven't spent a lot of time with fill my cup type of people, or the pantry is getting really cluttered right now, or, you know, any of the things that you use to kind of obtain that state of well-being? Is this a daily process, a monthly process? Like, what does that look like just very practically, if you can expand on that?
Mm-hmm. I try to be intentional every day, every day. And I, as has been mentioned in previous podcasts, for the last 90 days of 2019, I started this practice of beginning my day intentionally reflecting on five things that I was grateful for. And it would not be an exaggeration to suggest that that changed my life. It has grounded me in a way that I did not anticipate. And so it's a practice that I've continued into the new year, and I've even expanded it to set, you know, in, you know, intentions every morning. I outline, you know, what is my empowering belief for today? What can I do today that would make me really proud? Identifying what might get in the way of my, you know, accomplishing that thing that I've articulated would make me proud. And so I know that I need to pay attention to these things that I've outlined when I start to get really agitated, when my mind is not peaceful. So you might argue that what I offered in that first kind of snippet, when I'm not, you know, when I do not have a peaceful mind, when my pace is maybe too fast or too agitated, when I'm not present, when I'm not patient, when I'm not optimistic, I then have to start paying attention to those things that I need to do maybe more of or practice more of. So spending time with people who fill my cup. What do I need to whittle, right? So if I'm starting to feel kind of angsty, anxious, or dark and twisty, as I like to call it, I will, you know, just kind of do a lap around the house. What do I need to get rid of? Like, what is not serving me? Maybe I'll go through, and this is like a little peek into Sarah. Who do I need to like no longer follow on Instagram? Who do I just need to let go? What do I need to let go? It's not serving me. It's cluttering. It's just junk, and I need to let it go.
That's good. Are you activator achiever? I can't remember. Both?
Both.
That's so interesting. I wonder if some of that, I just need to achieve something to get out of that dark, angsty place, if there's any connection there. Mm-hmm. And going around the house and just like, okay, I can control this. I can get rid of this. If that's some sort of, I'm asking, I'm not telling. I'm just wondering if that's like some sort of like getting unstuck and okay, I can get a little bit of momentum in this one area. Okay, now we can start going back towards the peaceful place instead of away from it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah. Thanks. We can talk more about it.
Yeah. Wonderful. That's all we have time for today.
No.
Folks. So.
You are not off the hook.
I know. I have something written. So yes. I replied to you instantly. So here's what I have. And I've tried to take out like some specific stuff. So number one is that I'm well rested. I have 4 young children, and so maybe I'm just craving consecutive nights of sleep, but I can tell such a huge difference in my overall well-being for the day when I get a good night's sleep. It doesn't necessarily mean a specific number of hours, but there's just this feeling I have where I can focus. And we all know the data and statistics on sleep. It's just so good for you. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a very practical thing in my watch here that you can see, but our podcast listeners can't, actually measures my sleep.
Oh, wow.
And so I can like really tell like numbers wise, like, oh, good night, bad night. And then it says like, how much were you up during the night? And I'm kind of a numbers junkie that way. So that's one big area for me is around sleep. And then eating is another one. Like I know, and these are all connected. So if I'm not sleeping well, I crave more junk food, which then kind of furthers the spiral down. So if I can be eating just healthy food, drinking lots of water, again, a very practical, practical thing I can do. Exercising, like if I'm not just running, but doing other stuff that's actually kind of pushing me physically, not just like I'm going to go for a little, you know, jog where my heart rate barely gets up. Could be with weights, could be an actual race, whatever it is. And then being mentally challenged. So I try to always read every morning if my kids allow me. And it could be on a wide range of topics. But above all else, well-being for me, I define it as being present in every moment of every day, which is really, really hard for me to do. You know, we talked a little bit about kind of my maximizer futuristic, but I think for me, I know that I am not in a good place of well-being if I am, you know, I think worry is a part of that. So being kind of focused on the future in a worried state, be that, you know, financially, kids, like whatever that is, if it's just simply like I'm at the playground with my kids and yet I'm thinking about what I'm doing next and I'm not just sitting and enjoying that moment. Mm-hmm. And so those 4 things I mentioned earlier, rest, food, exercise, and some sort of mental challenge, to me, are really good markers of like, this is what I need to do for myself in order to be present with my kids, with here in this podcast with you, Sarah, and just being focused on that. So I think what's interesting is I've, you know, listened to our team and thinking about this for me, that it's just very practical. It's like, I have to do these things. If I do them, I feel happy and better. Mm-hmm. The stuff that I didn't put on there was any relational stuff. When I wrote this, I just kind of did this quickly and went back and tweaked it. But I was thinking about for today, like, why didn't I do that? You know, I didn't talk about my wife. I didn't talk about, you know, hanging out with the guys or going out with a couple friends. And I think that for me, it's because it just comes back to that idea of being present.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to have that. And I know that, you know, if I'm out with other people, that just helps me to be focused and can help me to be focused and present on what's going on in front of me. So a lot of rambling. Any of that make sense? Any of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well,
and you know, you and I have traveled a fair amount.
We have.
Over the years, going to see and spend time with our clients. And I know all these things to be true about you. Mm. I know all
Thank
these
you.
Things to be true.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think.
Yes. And I think your reflections being so accurate highlights a level of self-awareness, which I think is so important. I actually was texting our colleague, Carrie, earlier this afternoon, and she was, she asked me, how was your day? Well, how was your day? And I said, you know, I'm just, like I was mentioning earlier, I'm just a little, I wouldn't call it a funk, but I'm not my usual kind of jolly self today. And some of that could be because, you know, the sun didn't come out and that makes a difference for me. But I know that it's just a day and I'm not going to let it, you know, consume me or get ahead of myself that this whole week is going to take a turn or that even, you know, the hours before I go to bed are dictated by how I feel even right this moment.
Interesting.
And she reflected back and just sort of affirmed that perspective and shared, you know, some of her own reflections. And my then response to her was, isn't it amazing to be at a place in life where we have the wisdom and self-awareness to know these things?
Yes.
Because I didn't have that emotional maturity even 3 years ago. So all that to say, what I hear in your reflections is a great self-awareness and maturity and, you know, an acknowledgement of who you are. So I'm curious.
I appreciate that.
I know we'll run out of time here, but I'm curious how, now knowing that these things are what define well-being for you, what was it like to be so down and out? You know, I think I asked you at some point, when you were going to be taking your first run as after not having been able to for several weeks, you know, if that was the longest stretch that you'd gone since you really started actively running, and you'd said that it had been. So I'm curious, not only, I know how you were doing physically, but I'm curious how you were doing mentally and emotionally in that space when you couldn't necessarily turn to those things, those practices, those disciplines that have served you for so long.
Well, thank you for asking. And I'm going to answer it by way of transitioning into our closing. And so kind of going what you're saying off of Carrie's answer to your question and kind of how I was, you know, quote unquote, down and out. And also I know that people have a lot more serious stuff going on than I did. So I was like, I was fine. But so I came across this article and one of the headings was, can you change your well-being?
Hmm.
Dr. Ronald Siegel, the assistant clinical professor of psychology at Harvard Medical School and the faculty editor of Positive Psychology. So he's a big deal. The answer is yes. So that's good news. He says that 40% of what... There's hope. 40% of what determines happiness is under our control.
Hmm.
In contrast, only about 10% has to do with good and bad fortune. So that's great news because there's stuff that all of us can do. And so I had lost a bunch of weight, so I was just physically kind of drained. And because of that, when I started exercising again and even eating again, like it was physically painful, you know, going and being several minutes slower per mile was mentally and emotionally painful. And what I kept coming back to was, I don't have to get back to where I was today. Hmm. Like, all I need to do is kind of the hard work of, all right, if I can only get out here and just get 2 miles under my belt, that's great. I started this kettlebell class, which is this strength
thing. Oh, that's
so
exciting.
It's very exciting. And I could talk about that for the next hour because I'm really excited and into it.
Next time.
Mm-hmm. Next time on the Leadership Vision podcast. but there's, and I hope this doesn't sound the way I don't intend it, but there's a lot of women in the class who are all lifting a lot more weight than I am. Because they have been doing this for years. They are much stronger than I am. And I'm like, you know what? I am not here to prove any sort of strength, whatever. I'm just here like putting in the hard work and to try to kind of get back to that where I, that place that I was. And I think sometimes too many of us get focused on the ideal or perfect image of what they want, be that career, financial, physical fitness, you know, relationship, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I can never dig out of this emotional hole, this financial hole. So what is the point? Mm-hmm. And what's cool about this little blurb here that I'll share in the show notes is when you think about 40% of that, you can do something about. So, and then, you know, there's that 10% thing. So for the most part, you have the capacity to change your levels of well-being, and it doesn't have to happen today or tomorrow, but how do you find ways to put in the time to, and I'm just going to kind of randomly read some things that they focus on, to live in the moment, to be grateful, to do things for others. This was a cool one when one of them is take inventory of your strengths, then apply them in new ways in your daily life. So, you know, thinking about some of the work that we do, like, hey, I'm really good at thinking into the future. How do I apply that in a healthy way? You know, things like taking responsibility for your health. Like, there's a lot of stuff that that we have control over. And as long as we kind of focus on just making a little step here today, a little step here tomorrow, I think we can really impact our well-being personally, professionally, financially, emotionally, all of the things we talked about at the very beginning. So it's been about 2 weeks since I've been back into a more of a routine. And I got to say, I'm feeling a lot better, kind of as I, how we opened this. I'm really glad that I didn't get so discouraged early on and was like, I can't, I'm never going to run a half marathon ever again. So well, anyway, that's a very long-winded answer, yes. Sarah.
No, that's terrific. I'm glad you're getting back after it. And one of the things I heard you declare in that space before you were able to really dig back in was, you know, articulating your goals, what you wanted to accomplish when you were able to go full throttle again. So I think knowing where you're headed and understanding, like you said, that there are incremental baby steps that you have to take to get there.
Yes.
And they don't even have to be baby steps. Sometimes it's a baby step. Sometimes it's a giant step. But if you know where you're headed,
that's what you got to do. Exactly. And, you know, and I think the last thing that I'll say before we sign off, knowing how you tackle some of these things is so helpful. For you as an activator achiever is going to look very different than for me as a, you know, maximizer futuristic, just to sort of pick two. That's going to look different from someone else with, you know, responsibility, something else. I'm just throwing out random strengths now. And so understanding, like, as you think about your well-being, as you think about how you want to make improvements in your well-being, it's going to look so different to everyone, which is why last week I asked you all to define that and figure out what that means for you, because it could look very different. And if anyone listening to this try to uses mine or yours or Steph's or Linda's or any of our team to say, oh yeah, I want that one, it might not work. So if you haven't, go back and listen to last week's episode, but I'm just going to tell you to define what well-being means for you as you move into this new year. So Sarah, any final thoughts?
I would just encourage listeners to focus on one at a time. So whether that be, you know, one quarter at a time, whether it be the first 6 months of the year, maybe it's the thing you're going to focus on for the remainder of the year. Focus on one at a time. I'm a strong believer that you can really only do one thing really, really well. And again, tying it back to that reflection earlier of rising tides raises all boats. So if you are focusing on improving your relational well-being, however it is that you would define that, who would fall into that category for you, if you are intentionally working on that, I believe that that will benefit the other areas of which you would define, find, and experience a sense of well-being.
Thank you for listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, where we share our expertise in the discovery, practice, and implementation of a strengths-based approach to people, teams, and culture. For more resources about developing your strengths, the strengths of your team, or the strengths of your entire organization, visit us on the web at leadershipvisionconsulting.com. If you found value from this episode, we'd appreciate it if you would subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and a host of others. Please share this podcast and our other resources with anyone you think would benefit from going deeper into our strengths-based approach to individual, team, and organizational development. I'm Nathan Freeberg.
I'm Sarah Schlipp-Riedel.
And on behalf of our entire team, thanks for listening.
We nailed that.